former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning, and welcome to WGTD's Community Matters. I'm Laura Sumner Kuhn, your host for this morning, and I'm delighted to introduce my guest, Vicky Selko, who's the Manager of Strategic Initiatives and Community Partnerships for the City of Racine, which encompasses a huge area of very hot issues in our country, in our community right now. Her role, which was created about a year and a half ago, is to address disparities in health, education, employment, policing, and financial security and secure housing for all the members of Racine, so that we all share in equitable access to everything that we expect in life to live our lives. And so, Vicky, you have a tremendous responsibility, and all of these initiatives are new for the city, more or less. So welcome to our show. I'm excited for you to take some time to explain everything that's on your plate.
Thank you for having me, Laura. I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Great. I know we have, in our discussion before the show, we talked a little bit about the city's impending plans to start the Racine Financial Empowerment Center. And that's a pretty broad topic area. So maybe you could describe for us what this Empowerment Center will do and what its goals are.
Absolutely. About a year and a half ago, the mayor and I started really having conversations with community partners about what were the barriers locally that were keeping Racine residents from becoming homeowners, and with a particular eye on increasing minority homeownership. We started asking questions of both community partners, of financial institutions, residents, to explore what was holding people back from that. And we were having similar conversations with our partners on the workforce side about, you know, tell us the story of what's happening with Racine residents who are getting into work. What's sort of preventing them from getting into family supporting jobs, from successfully completing higher education or training that would really allow them to have stable middle class jobs? Tell us about the barriers there. And we heard, of course, a lot of pieces of that story. But one of the themes we kept hearing, particularly on the home ownership front, but certainly also on the workforce front and the entrepreneurship front, was residents who had low credit, low or no credit, and were being held back from a whole range of opportunities because of their credit. And certainly also hearing sort of similarly residents who had no savings, didn't have savings for a rainy day. So when the tire blows out on the car, all of a sudden having the transportation you need to get to work becomes really difficult because you don't have $400 to go replace those tires on the car. And so hearing of these both, you know, sort of dollar amounts that were holding people back from job-related success, not having savings that would allow people to purchase homes, to get reliable automobiles, to get on a path to opening their business and fulfilling those dreams, we started exploring what would be a solution. And we found an organization called the Cities for Financial Empowerment Fund, CFE Fund, which is basically working across the country to help residents in communities just like Racine, and frankly, communities much larger than Racine, to help those residents really achieve financial stability and resiliency. And they run something called the Bank On Initiative, which your listeners may have heard of, helping people access safe and affordable banking products. They also run an initiative called the Financial Empowerment Center effort, the FEC effort, which really is about providing residents with one-on-one individualized counseling by professionals. And low and moderate income residents for a long time have had access to what I would call financial literacy or financial awareness. And those programs or efforts are certainly, they certainly are helpful, but generally those involve people being in a group setting where you might feel reluctant or hesitant to sort of share your own financial struggles in a group, and where people get, you know, you get a handout, you get a brochure about here's how credit works, or here's how you can build your savings, or here's how you can become a homeowner. Brochures and information like that have their place, but I think what the research shows very clearly is that low and moderate income people to really succeed and to get on a path to resiliency, they need what middle-class folks get, which is professional financial counseling. And of course, if you're making 20, 30, 40 grand a year, or struggling to get ahead, you don't have extra resources to go pay a financial counselor. So the FEC movement is based on the idea that that people should get free and professional financial counseling to help them get banked in safe and affordable ways, to help them build savings, to help them improve credit, and to help them reduce debt and accomplish their financial goals. And so the City of Racine competed. The CFE Fund opened up a national competition looking for new communities to join this effort. And we applied a little more than a year ago and were picked, one of nine communities in the country selected to open the next FEC. And we are the smallest community they've worked with so far. And we were delighted to be selected and now have spent the last year building this FEC that will open in just a couple weeks in Racine. Our partner in this, it is very much a collaborative effort, and the city's partner in this work is a nonprofit organization called Housing Resources, Inc., HRI, which provides homeownership counseling. And they help first-time homeowners get everything organized and prepared so they can successfully become homeowners. And so HRI is going to add the FEC as a new service that they're offering. And Racine residents will soon have access to this free professional financial counseling that really is one-on-one and meant to help residents address whatever short or long-term financial issues they have, whether it's debt or savings or building credit, for short or long-term goals. We are thrilled to be opening this, and it will be open and available to city residents starting the week of December 7th.
So Vicki, can you tell me who would qualify for this service? How would they qualify?
So the only real requirement is that they are a City of Racine resident. There are no income requirements and no sort of program requirements. Any resident can utilize this service. Certainly we are prioritizing low and moderate income residents for this. So if somebody comes in and is trying to get services from the FEC and they make, you know, $80,000 a year and have a great retirement account and lots of benefits, our counselors are going to very gently encourage them to look for assistance that they could pay for. But there are no formal income requirements. You really just have to be a city resident, and residents can have as much counseling as they want from our new professional counselors. They can have one session, they can have six sessions, they can have a year's worth of sessions. It's set up in a way that recognizes that to do things like improve credit or build savings for emergencies or for big picture goals like owning a home, it may take some time, and the FEC is structured to allow for that.
I can see kind of a conundrum here that if I'm a person with very low income and I am maybe even underemployed, and I have debt, and I am barely scraping by to make ends meet, it is difficult to get me to think that of myself as a prospective homeowner, or that I would have some impossible way, that it seems to me right now, to be able to squirrel away some savings for that tire that blows out on my car when I'm barely making it now. I would think that part of your dilemma is going to be to recruit residents who find themselves in that very spot to take advantage of the center because they don't perceive of themselves as A, future homeowners, or B, with enough extra resources to build up their financial capacity. How are you going to recruit, and how are you going to talk to those residents that find themselves in that kind of predicament?
I guess I would say, Laura, I don't view that as a dilemma or a predicament. I think it's an opportunity. And I think we have a lot of Racine residents who are working, who many of whom are making, they're making $10, $12, $15 an hour and still struggling to get ahead. And those residents are perfect to benefit from the FEC. FECs nationally have succeeded in helping their clients reduce debt. More than $150 million in debt has been reduced and $23 million in savings. And these are for clients whose average income is less than $20,000 a year. So even when FEC clients come in with relatively low incomes and high amounts of debt and no savings, they are able to see tremendous progress through the FEC. And I want to be very clear, the FEC counselors are able to work with people. They are trained to work with residents who are at very low levels of income and who want to just learn how to budget and squirrel away $10 extra a week or $10 a month even to start, and to work with people who are maybe a little bit more stable, who are looking to make a longer-term goal come true, like home ownership. It is really intended for residents on that whole spectrum.
Are part of the services that they'll be offering reduction services, where they will have counselors who are able to negotiate a reduction in debt for residents who maybe are carrying a tremendous load of debt?
Yep, counselors are trained in how to help the FEC clients do exactly that, to negotiate for reduced debts, to negotiate different interest rates and payment amounts, to get back on track or deal with delinquent accounts. Our counselors are trained, they've gone through intensive training over the last couple of months to help our clients be able to deal with all of that. So for us, I mean, the FEC is, it's one piece of a strategy, right? That is not just about home ownership, but certainly for us, it started that way. And we certainly hope that by partnering deliberately with Housing Resources, Inc., that there'll be a really nice handoff between people who come into the FEC and are able to get assistance building savings, improving credit, so that perhaps a year down the road, maybe even longer, they're ready to walk across the hallway to the Housing Resources, Inc. counselors and learn how to become homeowners for the first time. But it also really, we hope, will be beneficial to those who don't want to become homeowners or don't have that as a dream, but who do want to have a little bit socked away for emergencies. Or frankly, I mean, even renters need to have good credit scores these days. Landlords are increasingly looking at credit for rental situations. So whether people want to just buy a car or rent an apartment or have savings for emergencies, the FEC will be able to assist them.
And how do you do this all during a pandemic? You know, when we think pre-COVID, we would think of a center as a place, right? And so where would residents find the Racine Financial Empowerment Center?
Well, it will be virtually run for the near future. We've hired two counselors who will be working for now from the Racine Public Library, and they'll be meeting with clients virtually on the phone or on video. And so we will roll with that as long as we need to keep everybody safe. And eventually they'll be able to meet in person with people. But certainly for now, they'll have to meet virtually. The website is not live yet, but it will be soon. And that website is racinefec.org. And if you go there now, you won't find much, but it will be live in the next week or so for residents to be able to make appointments and learn more about the services that will be offered there. But this really, I mean, just this is a new city service that we are offering in the same way that the city picks up recycling and trash and puts out fires. This is a service that the city is offering to our residents to help improve resiliency and stability, to help people build generational wealth, and really to help residents get on a path that hopefully supports their homeownership dreams, their entrepreneurship dreams and vision, and to help support them as workers as well.
Is there anything that you're doing to recruit residents to take advantage of these services that will be offered soon?
Oh yeah, we've spent quite a bit of time building a network of partners who are going to be referring their program participants and clients. We have more than 15 partners built already, and I think I have added two more this week alone. And so those are a network of other service providers and nonprofit organizations, but also institutions like Racine County Human Services and Racine County Child Support and Gateway Technical College, who will be referring their clients and their students to the FEC as well. And we'll certainly also be promoting it on social media and promoting it in other ways as well. I did a presentation this week to about 80 service providers about the FEC. And the number one question was, oh my gosh, how soon can I send people to this? So I am not hitting a problem with recruitment. I think if anything, we will need to increase our capacity and hopefully have the funds to add a third counselor sometime in 2021 to meet the demand.
And how many clients do you think that the center will be able to handle this first year?
They are expected by our national partner and funder, the CFE Fund. Each counselor is going to have to serve at least 200 unique clients in their first year of counseling. So we will serve at least 400 people in our first year. And my partner in this work is Dashika Kidd, who is the program manager at HRI. And Dashika sets very high goals. She thinks we will exceed that. So at least 400 in our first year. And if Dashika is right, which she usually is, it will be more than that.
Well, and I would think that the need is really tremendous in our city. When you put together your bid for this opportunity, could you tell us or share with us kind of the economic picture that you painted for the FEC to choose Racine as one of the 9 recipients of this program?
You mean in terms of why we were selected? Is that?
Yes, I think. I mean, there's some. You know, if you could share with us the portrait of the community that you offered them that made us a candidate, I think that would be important. One of the statistics that I think was probably involved with that decision was the fact that, you know, a high number of city residents rent where they live. I think the number I last saw was 46%. So nearly half Racine residents live in rental property. Can you give us some idea of the economic, overall economic health of our city that maybe helped attract this program to us?
Sure. I mean, I think there are several factors. We certainly, when we were applying for this a year ago, were very conscious of the designation that the county had received of being the second worst community in the country for African Americans. And among the metrics used in that report are things like income and high school degree attainment and employment and home ownership. And so all of that data, we certainly made that case to the national partners about why Racine had a tremendous need for this service. Unlike many communities as well, where there is some sort of nonprofit providing financial counseling services, Racine does not have that at all. And so I think that was also part of what made us compelling, that we had no service provider doing this one-on-one counseling and coaching with residents that really is so key to helping them succeed on so many fronts. But the other, frankly, I think what they have told us is that the mayor's commitment to this and Mayor Mason seeing this service as integral to his other goals around home ownership and increasing income and employment, and seeing how the FEC could fit into all of those other efforts, that was part of what stood out to them as well, that it is unique to have a mayor who understands how these efforts fit together and how unraveling systemic disparities needs to include multiple efforts. Certainly, as you said, we have a very high percentage of residents who live in rental housing, 46%, while the state average is only 33%. So we have a lot of our residents who are renting, and increasingly those tenants are paying $800, $900 a month for rent in the city, which given housing prices here, that is more than they might pay for a mortgage and taxes and insurance if they were to own that home. So both for the city's long-term success and vibrancy, we want more homeowners, but also because we want to untangle and address these disparities. I think that was all part of the picture we painted nationally to compete in that effort. I mean, we'll just add one other piece of data that your listeners might be interested in, is we really unpacked mortgage rates and how many mortgages go to people in our county based on race. And the most recent data shows, I'll throw out some numbers, and I will only use a couple of them. But in 2019, there were 178 African Americans in Racine County who got a loan to purchase a home. Compare 178 to 32 2003, 3,200 white people in Racine County who got mortgages in that same year. That is a staggering disparity of more than 3,000 white homeowners compared to less than 200 African-American homeowners. And the numbers for Hispanic homeowners are similar. There were less than 300 Hispanics or Latinos in Racine County who got loans to purchase homes in 2019. Those sorts of metrics were part of the picture we painted. And those are numbers that we keep in the front of our minds as we work every day, because those disparities are not only holding residents back from tremendous opportunity and wealth, they are holding the city back as well. And for the city to succeed, we want and very much need our African-American and Latino community members to have these same opportunities and access to opportunity and to wealth.
That's a shocking disparity. It is amazing to hear that. 178 African-American new homeowners compared to 3,200.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Which kind of brings us to the whole rents program, which also is a newer initiative of the city. And oftentimes I think when you had mentioned what the going rate is for renting a household in Racine and how that is far above what somebody would pay for their own mortgage, we see that the rising cost of housing, rental housing, kind of perpetuates this lack of home ownership, right? Because how on earth can you possibly save anything if you are paying such an extraordinary amount for rent? And sometimes in housing that may not warrant that kind of price tag. So the Rental Empowerment and Neighborhood Tenant Services, or RENTS program, was also an initiative that falls under your purview. And if you could tell us a little bit about what the RENTS program is intended to do and what kind of movement you might have seen in this first, not quite a year of its existence.
Sure. This was a major initiative that was passed by the Common Council last year, so almost exactly a year ago in the budget. And so we have spent 2020 really implementing all the pieces of this, and we still have work to do, but have made great progress. Listeners can learn more about the RENTS initiative from the city's website. There is a link to it, or if you just Google search City of Racine RENTS, you will find it. And really, with the large package of housing reforms that the city has seen in a generation, it was long overdue. The city has, I mean, like all cities in Wisconsin, there are numerous constraints now placed on cities by the legislature that limit what we can do to protect tenants and to address inequities in rental housing and in those laws. However, there were still things that we could do, and the RENTS package really is our effort to do as much as we possibly can to improve rental housing conditions throughout the city, provide as many protections as we can to our tenants, who, as you said, are almost half of the city's residents, really provide accountability for property owners who have, in some cases, let their properties languish for years and not made necessary maintenance, but also connect those property owners to resources to help them with property improvements and to help them maintain and enhance their properties in the city. As the mayor says regularly, we do need good landlords in the city. We have many, but we need more. And we organized last summer a rental, a tenant roundtable at the library, where we had on a Monday night in the middle of summer, we had more than 80 tenants show up who shared their stories about renting in Racine. And almost every tenant there shared stories about poor conditions in their rental unit and fear of retaliation if they were to say anything to the city, to enlist the city for help in dealing with it. That is not a situation that can be sustained. We had to take action to provide additional protections to tenants so they know that they are safe from retaliation if they call the city about problems in their rental unit. So the rents package does include those additional protections. It also required landlords and commercial property owners as well to register their property with the city so that we would know which properties were rental, which ones weren't, and who do we contact if there is a fire, if there is a problem. There are certainly a lot of rental properties in the city owned by landlords who do not live here. And for years, we have had difficulty figuring out who do we call when that property has issues. And so we have required those landlords to register their properties with the city. And that is underway right now. We've already registered several thousand of those landlords. We really appreciate the property owners who acted quickly to respond to that new requirement and who have registered their properties. That's going to allow us to both communicate with those property owners much more easily. We'll have their emails, we'll have their phone numbers, we will know how to reach them if there is an issue. We can also tell them about programs and services that might be beneficial to them or their tenants, and it allows us to address issues and problems much more quickly. The Rents Initiative has several other parts that we're still working to implement. COVID has obviously slowed down some of our work on that. In particular, one of the pieces of rents is based on the idea that we have a lot of properties that may have issues, rental properties that may have problems, some of which are very basic, like broken porches, broken windows, leaky roofs, sinks or faucets that don't function properly, things that really are basic habitability problems that create health or safety or wellness problems for the tenants living there. We want to prioritize those issues and get those properties up to at least minimum standards where we know that tenants living there and paying good money to rent there are safe and healthy. And so certainly many tenants hesitate to call the city to report those problems, particularly undocumented tenants or tenants who have eviction histories or criminal records, who really fear retaliation, even if our ordinances have been changed to give them increased protection. So we set up what we're calling the Neighborhood Enhancement and Stabilization District, which is a fancy way of saying a district where the data shows us very clearly that there are a large number of code complaints or property violations on properties in that district. And so the council approved that district this year. And our plan is to do proactive inspections there in that part of the city. So we're not waiting for tenants to call us to report problems. We will be having the city inspectors go and proactively inspect and work with those owners to address those habitability violations. Because of COVID, that piece is on hold. It's simply not a time where anyone wants city inspectors in their home or around their property, and we don't want our inspectors being in multiple properties a day right now either. But once it is safe to do so, that will be the next piece that we really move forward of the Rents Initiative, to give tenants this additional protection of knowing the city's coming in an area of the city where we suspect or we know from the data that there are increased likelihood of problems, and we're going to be increasing our inspections and our efforts to bring those properties up to a place where they are healthy and safe for all of the tenants living there.
You know, Vicki, as you're describing this approach to providing safe housing for the residents, it occurs to me that as a community, our recognition that we have fallen behind in ensuring safe housing for everyone goes in waves. Because as a new resident to the city 35 years ago, the city did have a program in place where every single unit that was rented had to go through a city inspection first. And it was required of the landlord to provide that inspection and provide information to the tenants who were renting of their rights should something go awry in the tenant-landlord relationship. And I think through the years, as leadership in the city changes and budget restrictions change, that part of, I think it was part of the environmental health department of the city, those things kind of fall away. And so while all of these initiatives, so this reminds me of that program that had great safeguards way back when, that kind of fell away and fell out of favor of city leaders.
If I could just note, Lauren, and Laura, I'm sorry to interrupt, but just to that is a great example of something that, yes, cities used to be able to do that in Wisconsin, to inspect all properties or some properties. And the legislature took that away from cities and made that something cities could not do anymore. And they did that after tremendous pressure and lobbying from landlords who did not want to have municipalities inspecting their properties regularly. And frankly, holding them accountable for ensuring habitable living environments for people who were paying to live there. And so the only way we are able to do that now is by doing what we've done, where we've had to use the data to identify the parts of the city where code violations and code complaints occur more regularly, and have our council sign off on that map in that district. And that is the only way now that cities in Wisconsin can do this sort of proactive inspection. When we passed this a year ago, the only other city in the state that was doing this was Oshkosh. There might be a couple others now, but when we passed this last year, we became, I believe, only the second community in the state to reinsert and re-engage that piece of our work to maintain housing after legislative changes eroded that very basic ability for cities several years ago.
Is there any effort among the League of Municipalities to pressure the legislature to loosen those restrictions on municipalities to ensure the safe housing of their residents? Is there any kind of legislative push going on?
I don't know of that. My focus has been turned pretty at the local level. So I don't know, but certainly the legislative majority right now does not, is the same majority that put in place these restrictions and that rolled back tenant protections just a few years ago. So I think the League and other savvy lobbying partners probably recognize that is not a fruitful path to pursue at this point until there is a new legislative majority.
It seems to me that the ability for the city to be aware of which houses are being rented or which properties are being rented depends on kind of a volunteer effort among landlords to register. You said that there are a couple of thousand that have done so far. Do you have any clue of the number of rental properties that there may be in the city?
We have some estimates, certainly, but they are all rough estimates until we actually can get property owners registered. We gave landlords until October 15th to comply with that initial registration. And I believe our building department or others will certainly start enforcing soon as they come across property owners who have not complied with that new requirement. The legislature limited us to what we could charge for any registration efforts. And it's a one-time $10 per property fee. So it is certainly not a burdensome fee for property owners to pay that one-time $10 cost. And our city staff will be working diligently to try and get all of them registered over the coming months.
I think the other component of the whole rents program is the protections, as you've mentioned, that are given to residents who find themselves living in inhabitable conditions and make a complaint. Can you tell us a little bit about that use of an escrow account for repairs and the protections for the tenants who are afraid of making a complaint, but then know that they have to do that to have clean running water and clean sanitary environment to live in?
Sure. We did two things on this front to really protect tenants as part of the rents ordinance. One, as I said, was increasing these protections against landlord retaliation. We certainly had seen and heard from tenants, and our health department and other inspectors had seen this as well, where a tenant would call the city to complain about a very basic violation, and the landlord then, out of retaliation for having the city inspectors show up, would threaten to raise the tenant's rent, or would threaten to evict the tenant, or to not renew the tenant's lease. All of that creates tremendous fear among tenants to actually call the city and report these problems that might be making their rental unit unsafe or unhealthy. And so the ordinance now is very clear that if tenants call the city to complain about property violations, and the landlord then takes any of those kinds of actions against the tenant within the next 6 months, that it will be presumed to be retaliatory. And so we will certainly be, the city has the ability to issue citations and fines for landlords who retaliate against tenants. And tenants could also certainly raise the ordinance as a defense if they did end up in eviction court over something, over an eviction that stemmed from a retaliatory action by the landlord. So it is not a perfect system, but it is certainly meant to discourage that sort of retaliatory behavior and to give tenants some legal leg to stand on to know that they are safe in calling the city to report these code violations or other problems and ensure that they're not going to be evicted for that or have their rent raised or have, I mean, we have heard, you know, landlords who then threaten to lock tenants out, illegally lock them out of their own unit because they called the city to report code violations. And to be clear, this does not protect tenants who are behind on the rent and who call the city to complain about code violations to get out of paying their rent. That is not how this works. They still are responsible for paying their rent, but it is meant to give tenants additional protections because we want them to call the city. We very much want to know if they are renting properties in the city of Racine that are causing health hazards or safety hazards for them or their families. We want to get our trained staff out there to work with that landlord to fix those issues quickly and ensure that the tenant is paying money for a unit that is healthy and safe for them. The escrow deposit piece that you mentioned is sort of the next, that would be sort of the next step, the next trigger that a tenant could utilize if they've called the city to complain. Let's say they've got, water's not working or the hot water's not working, and they call the city and the city comes out and inspects and says, yep, you don't have any hot water. Your landlord needs to provide that. And the city says to the landlord, you've got to fix this. Here's your order. You've got to fix the hot water. And the landlord does not do it. If the deadlines have passed and the landlord refuses to fix it, in that case, then the tenant would be given authorization to pay their rent to the city instead of to the landlord. And the city then would hold those rent funds in escrow and only pay the landlord when the landlord has actually addressed those code violations. And that process also gives the city flexibility. In that example I used, for example, if the landlord really is not fixing the hot water and this has, you know, gone on and the tenant and their family are still without hot water, the city could use those rent funds that the tenant paid to get a plumber in to actually fix the hot water and ensure that it's working. And the landlord then would get the rent payment eventually minus whatever we had to pay to the plumber because we can no longer tolerate landlords who are letting habitability violations like that, very basic violations, not be addressed and not addressing them swiftly. And so the escrow deposit program is one as well that is intended to give some additional fairness to the process and additional incentive to property owners to recognize that the city is taking these violations seriously. And we want tenants to call and report these, and we will help them enforce this by giving them this other option. And just to note, they still have to pay their rent, right? They still have to pay the full amount of their rent. They would just be paying it to the city in those limited circumstances where the landlord hasn't fixed something. And we would hold on to it. The landlord can get all of their rent payments as soon as they've addressed those habitability violations. So that was another important protection we put in place as part of the rents initiative.
I'm curious, have you had many occasions in which you've had to use that?
We have not yet, but some of that I think is largely due to COVID this year and the fact that many of these habitability violations would be things that would likely be happening inside apartments. And for much of the year, our health department, because they are just simply completely overwhelmed with the pandemic response, they have not been doing those sorts of internal inspections this year the same way they were previously. So I expect that once we are past the pandemic, we will start to see more of this.
Well, and as our time is kind of fleeting by, that begs another question. In this time of pandemic, when we have such a large number of people who are renting their households, and we've had a large number of maybe frontline workers, essential workers, many of them probably paid at minimum wage or slightly above, we had many instances in Racine where people are losing their housing because of their inability to pay rent given the loss of jobs or their loss of hours in this COVID time?
I don't have clear data on that. We certainly work collaboratively with a lot of community partners who have absolutely said they are seeing families and individuals who have been evicted or who are certainly behind on rent and will likely be evicted due to their income being cut or their hours being reduced or being ill, frankly, or having a family member who was ill in the middle of the pandemic. I think much of that is a little bit on hold due to the eviction moratorium. Much of the year has had eviction moratoriums in place at one level or another, whether it was the state or the federal, and now there's the CDC moratorium in place. The city has deployed more than $500,000 in CARES Act or federal funds to prevent evictions that were caused by COVID hardship. And we're partnering with Lutheran Social Services to administer those funds to ensure that residents who are facing eviction due to COVID, that we can help them catch up on that rent and not actually be evicted or get into other housing. So we'll have a clearer sense of those numbers, I think, early next year. But certainly many individuals and families in our community are behind on rent, and that rent bill is going to come due once the moratorium is over. So we are certainly hopeful that there will be additional stimulus payments from the federal government to help residents who have lost income really to no fault of their own during this pandemic.
Well, Vicki, you certainly gave us a lot to consider about the city's initiatives to really provide safe and wholesome living environment for so many of our residents here. I look forward to maybe a future time when we can have you back on the show, because we only just touched the tip of the iceberg. There's so many other areas that your position as manager of strategic initiatives and community partnerships entails, including, you know, overall health and education and employment and policing. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to have other conversations about these other initiatives that you are involved in for on behalf of the city residents. So I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I would just add as just sort of a final note that, I mean, Mayor Mason has made it very clear repeatedly that he is completely committed to moving Racine in a new direction where, even as we are facing these economic challenges and public health crisis, that we are focused on addressing these inequities and disparities in the community. And that is really what I wake up every day focused on, of trying to put in place major initiatives that will move the needle in big ways on minority home ownership, health outcomes, high school graduation rates, financial resiliency, quality rental housing. All of those are pieces to moving the city forward in a direction that erases and reduces these longstanding inequities. And so I hope listeners hear that these are very much priorities of Mayor Mason's administration, and certainly of my work every day here for the city.
Well, thank you for all that work, Vicki. I look forward to talking to you in the future.
Thank you. Likewise.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.